Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This week, Obamacare fury and defense, more NSA uproar, a Sandy anniversary, and onboard electronic devices cleared for takeoff. Congressional critics pounded Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius over the Affordable Care Act rollout, over some Americans losing old policies, even over why she didn't lose hers.
Why aren't you losing your insurance?
Pardon me?
Why aren't you losing your health insurance?
Because I'm part of the federal employees.
Why aren't you in the exchange?
Plan.
You're in charge of this law, correct? Why aren't you in the exchange?
By midweek, President Obama went on active defense.
If they put as much energy into making this law work as they do in attacking the law, Americans would be better off.
And in the midst of furor over NSA surveillance abroad and into Google and Yahoo, NSA Director Keith Alexander held his ground.
It is much more important for this country that we defend this nation and take the beatings than it is to give up a program that would result in this nation being attacked.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable with Siobhan Gorman of The Wall Street Journal, Julie Rovner of NPR, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What do you see emerging on Obamacare, on the NSA, food stamps, Texas abortion? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us today from Washington, Siobhan Gorman, intelligence correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. Siobhan, welcome back to On Point.
Great to be with you.
Also with us from Washington, Julie Rovner, health policy correspondent for NPR, author of Healthcare Policy and Politics A to Z. Julie Rovner, welcome back to you as well.
Nice to be here.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Siobhan, and Julie.
Let's dive right in with Kathleen Sebelius. She was in the hot seat, not the first, but memorably. Here she was, saying she's as angry as anybody else and frustrated about the rollout of the Affordable Care Act.
I am as frustrated and angry as anyone with the flawed launch of healthcare.gov. So let me say directly to these Americans, you deserve better. I apologize. I'm accountable to you for fixing these problems.
There she was in the hot seat. Of course, the spotlight, even as she spoke, was moving to the issue of people losing their policies. We'll look at that as well. Julie Rovner, here was the Health and Human Services Secretary making her first appearance before Congress. Where does this uproar over Obamacare stand as we sit here today, Julie?
Well, it's funny. You know, when Congress summoned the secretary, it was all about the non-working website, and it was kind of an embarrassment for the secretary. As she was testifying, the website was down. It was down for, yeah. I think they said, 36 hours this week. It was a little bit hard to figure out why. There was a failure over the weekend by an outside vendor. They said that this seemed to be related to that. It appears to be back up and working now. But really, the line of attack seems to have shifted again away from the troubles of the website, which now the administration promises will be fixed by the end of November in time for people to sign up by the middle of December and get a coverage starting January 1st. And to these letters that are going out from a number of insurers around the country about people whose plans will be ending because they are not in compliance with the requirements of the law starting January 1st. And that seems to be sort of the new uproar. So both Kathleen Sebelius on Wednesday and on Tuesday before a different committee, Marilyn Tavner, the head of the agency that's overseeing much of the law, had a lot of questions about these letters that have been going out.
The second big line of attack there, people, yeah, maybe it wasn't thorough, but they liked the price that they were paying for it. Here was Marsha Blackburn, Republican from Tennessee, again going after Sebelius, saying Obamacare was taking away choice from her constituents. Here's the Congresswoman then, Kathleen Sebelius.
What do you say to Mark and Lucinda in my district who had a plan, they liked it, it was affordable, but it is being terminated and now they do not have health insurance?
Insurance companies cancel individual policies year in and year out. They are a one-year contract with individuals.
Okay.
They are not lifetime plans.
They're
not an employer plan. Your
It's what they wanted, and I will remind you. Some people like to drive a Ford, not a Ferrari, and some people like to drink out of a red Solo cup, not a crystal stem. You're taking away their choice.
Julie Rovner, part of this is about promises made. We'll listen back to what President Obama said in years past. But what about, I'm reading today that millions of letters are going out canceling individual plans that fail to meet minimum standards. How big an issue is this going to be? I guess 80% of Americans are not affected by this at all, but among the other 20%, it seems not that uncommon.
Well, it's not 20%. It's hard to know exactly, and one of the things we've been doing this week is trying to figure out how many people are in the individual market, and it is, to some extent, the individual and the small business market. But it's really considerably less than 20% that we're talking about. And of that 20%, not everybody has a non-conforming policy. And in fact, people with non-conforming policies can keep those really for an additional year. You can, insurance companies, if they want to, can actually renew those policies on December 31st of 2013, and they can actually go until December 31st of 2014.
They can, but will they? Aren't these letters coming out saying, find a new way?
Yeah, a lot of them are, but that's not a requirement of the law. That's something that the insurance companies are doing because they may want to upsell people. They may want to get them into exchange policies, because if they get into policies in the exchange, then they may be eligible for these reinsurance payments from the federal government. Mm-hmm. So it may be a better business decision for the insurance companies, but in some cases, they're not necessarily doing it because they have to. They may be doing it because they want to, which is kind of a different issue. Regardless of that, you know, I think to go back to what Marsha Blackburn was saying, you know, people may want to drink out of a red Solo cup. People may not know that that red Solo cup may have a big hole in it. A lot of people, there have been a lot of fact checks this week on some of these policies. You know, there's a particular policy, not to single anybody out, but I was talking to an expert who talked about these policies that are being canceled in Florida. One particular policy that some thousands of people have is literally a discount plan. It pays it gives you $50 off of whatever you know, costs you incur. So if you go to the hospital and you have a $10,000 bill, it gives you $50 off. Yeah, it only costs $50 a month, which is great, but it really doesn't cover much of anything. So, you know, these people are complaining that they're losing their $50 a month plans, but really, if they get sick, they basically don't have any coverage. So, which is not to say that some people aren't going to lose fairly okay plans that they like and may have to pay more if they don't qualify for subsidies. But that's not to say that there aren't plans that are going away for a reason.
So some tough realities being exposed here. But Jack, let's listen back for a second. There were also promises made, promises heard anyway. Here we are. This is in 2009, June. President Obama saying, if you like your plan, you will keep your plan. Talking with the American Medical Association.
If you like your health care plan, you'll be able to keep your health care plan, period. No one will take it away, no matter what.
Period. Well, maybe that was a semicolon. Go back to 07. Candidate Obama presented his health care plan to the country, promising there that if your premium changed, it would be to come down.
My plan begins by covering every American. If you already have health insurance, the only thing that will change for you under this plan is the amount of money you will spend on premiums. That will be less than what you're spending now.
So, Jack, here we are. I mean, that sound is being pulled out of the basement and played and played and played. In fairness, you know, maybe what he proposed on the campaign trail clearly wasn't what went into law. But this sense of, you know, one thing offered, another implemented, Jack.
It's deadly for him, it seems to me. I mean, the president at Faneuil Hall said the Republicans, who are not mentioning that some of these new plans are better than the old plans, are, quote, grossly misleading. Well, those words apply to him, I think, and to what he said. I mean, he said people won't be paying more, but according to Jonathan Gruber, the MIT economist who was involved in the architecture of this plan, a significant portion of the 9 million people holding these policies will, in fact, pay more. Now, they'll be getting more. They'll be getting much better plans, but what the president said isn't true if Gruber is right. You know, but there's another side to this. You quoted Marsha Blackburn, and she said, you're taking people's insurance away. Well, and that is true, at least temporarily, for some people, but look at the Republicans. I mean, you know, they have never come up with an alternative. Their one alternative that they have voted on is the Ryan Plan, and what would the Ryan Plan do? Well, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation, it would cut 14 to 20 million people who have Medicaid now off. They would go. And the 10 to 17 million to be covered by the expansion of Obamacare, they wouldn't be touched at all. So about 30 million Americans would lose health insurance under what Republicans have voted on. And so they're complaining to Obama, you're taking insurance away. They have voted to take away insurance from about 30 million people.
It can go away in all kinds of ways. You can think you have it and not have much. Sometimes it's a security blanket, very cheap, but full of holes. The president went on, what, offensive defense or active defense in Boston, Faneuil Hall, this week.
So anyone peddling the notion that insurers are canceling people's plan without mentioning that almost all the insurers are encouraging people to join better plans with the same carrier and stronger benefits and stronger protections, while others will be able to get better plans with new carriers through the marketplace, and that many will get new help to pay for these better plans and make them actually cheaper, if you leave that stuff out, you're being grossly misleading, to say the least.
Julie Robner, it's hard to see where this comes down. There's the law. Republicans want to dismantle it. The president now defending it. But it seems that, you know, he's having to kind of spin a little bit, twist a little bit to make that defense. Where's the impact of all this debate and furor hit, Julie?
Well, certainly, you know, there were a lot of people who picked up on the president's use of the phrase grossly misleading. I think certainly one thing that everybody's learned that, you know, no politician, any politician goes at his or her peril to promise to bring down premiums ever,
healthcare,
to bring down the cost of healthcare.
But
yeah.
Still, there were the words.
Yeah, there were the words. You know, one of the ironies of this is that healthcare costs are growing at the slowest rate pretty much ever. You know, that keeps getting lost in this. And, you know, it may or may not be because of the Affordable Care Act. The recession had a big part of this. The Affordable Care Act may have had something to do with this. But that's lost in all of this. Still, I don't think anyone ever has figured out how to bring down health care costs. Yet that is what the president said, and that those words are coming back to bite him now. This was a big redistribution. They're going to be winners. They're going to be losers.
And the pressure
this is hard
on,
for the White House.
Yeah, the furor on. We'll look at it. Julie Robner, please stand by. Siobhan Gorman, we will come to you on NSA surveillance. Please stand by there in Washington. We're looking at a week in the news. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're looking at a week in the news. Obamacare battle, more heat on the NSA, abortion fight in Texas, electronic devices cleared for takeoff, food stamps cut back this week as of today. Julie Robner joins us from Washington, health policy correspondent for NPR. Siobhan Gorman joins us, intelligence correspondent for the Wall Street Journal. Jack Beatty's here. We'll take your calls on the healthcare front, but I want to get some of the NSA surveillance issue out on the table here. Siobhan Gorman, you're following this closely. Here we have the top dogs of American intelligence before Congress this week, after all the furor out of Europe and beyond over Edward Snowden revelations of surveillance and surveillance on top leaders. And then the story that they've also been looking into Google and into Yahoo, looking to those fiber optic cables. We hear some word from them, Siobhan, saying, well, maybe if you can tell us how to do this better, we'll change. But before Congress, there was an awful lot of digging in as well, saying we've got to do this and we're going to do this.
Yeah, there was really mostly digging in. I think that the message from the intelligence leaders this week was, we think that these programs are valuable, we're going to defend them. And you've seen at least some stepping up of trying to push back on some of the news reporting. There were many more accusations of inaccurate reporting this week, really, than we've seen in the past. So I think that they're definitely mounting a more aggressive defense, which suggests that they also feel quite under siege.
Well, let's look at what's on the table. That's from last week, but still there this week. Is there any doubt that they were listening to the cell phone calls and more of leaders in Europe and beyond?
No. At this point, it seems that they were definitely listening to Chancellor Merkel. We reported a little bit earlier this week that the White House, the president at least, apparently didn't learn about this until he had requested an interagency review starting in June after the first set of Snowden leaks came out. And that turned up the fact that they were spying on these 35-some leaders, including Merkel. And at that point, they cut off the monitoring monitoring of some of those leaders, including Merkel. So that doesn't seem to be particularly in question, at least that they were doing it.
And the large-scale snooping on European populations. What about that?
Well, interestingly, what we learned a little bit earlier this week was that the reports that we had seen out of the press in France and Spain and to some degree Italy seemed to have the story a bit backwards, that the documents and diagrams that they were reading to show that there was NSA spying on the French, et cetera, at least collecting their phone records, was actually NSA diagrams that showed the French contribution to NSA. And they were actually not necessarily phone records coming from France. They were actually phone records that the French were picking up on in war zones like Afghanistan and elsewhere. So that's a sort of a course correction from this week.
Question mark there. And then the latest revelations or assertions that the NSA has been looking into Google accounts and Yahoo accounts, maybe not in the United States, but on a very large scale at nodes of communication of those abroad.
Well, it's interesting in that they had obviously placed an intercept device at a critical node that was between these data centers that Google and Yahoo have, and mm-hmm. that certainly suggests that they were interested in trying to filter some of that traffic. What's gotten a little bit lost is that actually NSA has a version of this capability in the U.S. I mean, we reported in August that NSA has relationships with telecommunications companies in the U.S. that cover 75% of U.S. telecommunications, and they have sort of a two-step filtering process that has the telcos do the first set of filtering on behalf of NSA, looking for particular things of note, which NSA calls selectors, and the telcos then give, these are U.S. telcos, give, large streams of internet data to NSA to then filter that further for these quote-unquote selectors that they're looking for, which could be an email address or a phone number, and these are foreign, tied to foreign intelligence interests, but it does sift through a lot of American information. That's true both in the United States and overseas. So this is one more example of how that's happening, and it happens to be an overseas example.
American companies complaining about this now. People all over the world wondering if there's any privacy here. And then, of course, those relations with countries abroad, those were big. And this was Tuesday, House Intelligence Committee. Democratic Representative Jen Schakowsky was criticizing the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, and the NSA Director, General Alexander, for their defense of NSA surveillance programs.
All of us are dealing with a problem in our international relations. There will be changes. What I heard from you was a robust defense, effectively, of the status quo.
And let's listen to some of that. This is James Clapper saying why they went after some of those leaders and what they were up to. Here's James Clapper.
It's invaluable to us to know where countries are coming from, what their policies are, how that would impact us across a whole range of issues. And it isn't just leaders themselves, it's what goes on around them and the policies that they convey to their governments.
Jack Beatty, we heard Jen Schakowsky there, Congresswoman, saying there will be changes. Is that clear to you, Jack, despite everything that's coming out here? Is that clear?
It is not clear at all. I mean, she was the exception. I didn't see all of that hearing, but she was the exception in challenging them. The chairman, Republican, and the vice chairman, a Democrat, sort of bowed to them and said, oh, well, these are great programs, aren't they, General? And they said, yes. You know, these are remarkably politically unintelligent intelligence officials. I mean, here we have this huge, as Schakowsky says, international scandal problem in international relations. Our allies are saying, what are you doing? And these people are saying, well, we're doing what everybody does. We're just going out there and, you know, sucking up all the information we can from Angela, from anybody. And you know, meanwhile, the president is trying to apologize for these things while his people are saying we're doing it. And the people are saying, by the way, we told the White House, and the president, people in the White House are saying we didn't know anything about it. This is a mess. And the president needs to get his intelligence team on the same sort of foreign policy channel that he's on, which is one of we're not going to do it again. We regret that we did it.
Not clear that that's going to happen. There is this legislation, Siobhan Gorman, from the Senate Intelligence Committee not the full Senate yet, but approved there by an 11-4 vote, would increase congressional and judicial oversight of intelligence activities, we're told, would create a 10-year prison sentence for people who access classified material without authorization. Hello, Snowden. I mean, this is Dianne Feinstein and Saxby Chambliss putting this out. Do you see a legislative significant reform in the works or not, Siobhan?
Well, I see legislative reform in the works. Significant is definitely to be seen, and it's also in the eyes of the beholder. I mean, there are a number of lawmakers on the Senate Intelligence Committee who think that this bill that was passed out of committee yesterday is going to make huge changes. There are a number of advocates, particularly in the privacy and civil liberties realm, that say that it hardly does anything. And there are lawmakers like Ron Wyden, who's been a strong advocate of change for NSA surveillance, who says that this is not remotely enough. So I think that what we're starting to see is a real bifurcation on Capitol Hill, basically between lawmakers that align themselves with the establishment, so to speak, and these tend to be the leaders of the committee and some others, and more rank-and-file members or people who trend more in the civil libertarian direction. This does not divide cleanly along partisan lines at all. I did want to add one thing to what Jack was saying, which I think was really smart analysis. What we've seen on the part of intelligence officials is a real detachment sort of from the political process.
Yeah, striking.
And well, but it's also by design. I mean, they're not actually supposed to be political. So we're starting to see them kind of thrown into this, you know, huge political ocean, and they're really struggling even to tread water because it's just a very unfamiliar territory for them to be in. And part of that you saw when Director Clapper, the Director of National Intelligence, mm-hmm. basically said, you know, look, we spy on foreign leaders the way we spy on anybody. They're just a quote-unquote selector to us. And it's the idea that all of these quote-unquote selectors are created equal, whether you're Angela Merkel or you're, you know, the head
a
of Al-Qaeda.
A selector means a target? Is that what you mean, selector?
Yeah, I mean, it's identifying Goodness. Information. So it's a phone number. It would be Angela Merkel's phone number.
So we're all just data. But there are issues of privacy and rights here, at least in this country, and one would think the allies are saying abroad as well. I want to go to our listeners. We'll come to listeners on healthcare in just a moment. But first on the NSA, Ken in Huntland, Tennessee. Ken, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
As I listen to these stories, the thing that jumps out at me is the hypocrisy of all of the people who are well-informed about how this sort of thing works. The government leaders in these foreign countries and here in the United States who are wringing their hands over the notion that we're spying on folks is silly. It shows either stupidity or naivete.
What if they're spying on you, Ken, on your Google account, maybe from a node overseas, but nevertheless doing it? Is that a problem or not?
Well, of course it is, and there are regulations, there are laws in place right now to deal with that.
But apparently not. I mean, the story is that this has gone on, that they tapped in fiber optic cables connecting Google and Yahoo overseas servers, but they can, you know, get all kinds of data out there, including your data.
Well, sure, but what you're looking at, though, is something like commercial fishing. You know, we have commercial fishermen who are denied the right to catch certain types of fish, and they try to design nets to keep those fish out, and when they bring them aboard, they throw them overboard. We are going to collect data that we're not supposed to collect. The question is, what's done with that data once we collect it?
Do you have full confidence that once it's collected, it'll be properly used by people, you know, with very, very light oversight, it would seem? I mean, does this really line up with American values, expectations, and rights, Ken?
Well, I speaking from a position of experience, and I'm not going to dwell on this too much, I worked at the National Security Agency.
Okay.
I had a career in the military as a cryptologist.
Hmm.
And I'm here to tell you that most of the people who are doing the work are citizens. And most of those citizens have a very conservative idea and value system about what it means to be an American and have privacy. So, you know, you're going to, if you have a lot of abuses against American targets, you would have a lot more whistleblowers than just the fella who, you know, took the data and went to Russia.
Ken, I take your observation seriously there, and it is. I take some comfort in it if it's, as you say, firsthand observation there, and I appreciate your call. Jack, I mean, one has to take some comfort in that, if that is indeed the ethos inside. On the other hand, there's a very large trust us element here, and I can't help but wonder, these Snowden revelations just keep coming. There may be many more of them. Is this wall really uncrackable, or do we at some point, the president's made some sympathetic noises, but do we get into change, or is there an intelligence black box here, Jack, that even public and allies, and even if they're outraged, they won't crack?
Well, it's frightening to think that there is that kind of, you know, IT doomsday machine, isn't there? The thing that the politicians can't stop. It's just going to go on.
We will collect.
We will collect because we can. And, you know, we've reached a point where, I mean, I hear where Ken is coming from, and he said there are people with conservative values. But this is anything but conservative, that the government the government should be having access to anything like our communications. You know, Tom, the first week we were on, our show was on after September 11th, we had Stanley Hoffman, the great Harvard political scientist, on, and he said he wasn't worried about the damage that Al-Qaeda could do to us. He was worried about the damage we would do to ourselves in fighting Al-Qaeda and the values we would lose. And this week, David Rothkopf in Foreign Policy wrote, "We are becoming the victims not of terrorism, but of terror, of our own fear." And when you look at this NSA octopus, that seems to be a pretty fair description of how, because, you know, the yield on intelligence is relatively, well, I quote from a document, little reportable intelligence either here or abroad, and yet it goes on.
One would have thought that terror virus would have died out by now, but maybe it just gets incorporated. But it is up against the toughest kind of attacks on it yet right now. Bob in Wells River, Vermont, you're on, Bob.
Hello, thank you. Yes, I'm amazed, and it just keeps getting more interesting. I wonder what we know about the choreography of these revelations. They just keep coming in such a beautiful and increasing amount, and what's the end game? Who's doing this? It's like art.
It is fascinating. It is artful in its way, like it or not. Siobhan Gorman, I mean, Edward Snowden came out with all this stuff. He hunkered down in Hong Kong with Glenn Greenwald, who's been our guest here a number of times. Now Snowden's off. Greenwald still seems to have his hand on the tap here. What about this observation from Bob on the choreography of revelation, the skill, the art in it, the motive in it, and where it goes, Siobhan?
Well, he makes an observation, actually, that even some in the government have made, which is that particularly for the revelations about overseas spying, they seem to come at times that are particularly sort of politically difficult for the government. I think we first started to see some of this with regard to revelations about U.S. spying in China, and that was right before President Obama was to meet in their own carefully choreographed meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping. So we've seen that kind of from the beginning, and it certainly doesn't seem accidental. What's a little bit unclear at this point is how much of it's being guided by Snowden. Snowden also seems to still have some guidance that he's getting from kind of the alumni, so to speak, of WikiLeaks. And he's obviously working with Greenwald and a number of other reporters. So there's obviously a considerable amount of thought that goes into it. At the same time, it does sound like there are so many documents that some of it may also be literally what they are able to pull together, you know, as they go. And so I think some of it's choreographed and some of it may be happenstance. I did want to make one quick point.
Yes,
on the previous caller's comment. He is right to a point in that the NSA, even when it's picking up information overseas, is required to try to separate out information about Americans, and its quote-unquote selectors are geared toward foreign intelligence. However, what remains unclear is whether or not the quote-unquote minimization procedures to protect that of American information really are adequate. I mean, a lot of lawmakers who have tracked this for a long time do seem to feel that they're adequate, but some of the documents Mr. Snowden has revealed do raise some questions about it. For example, they can keep any encrypted communication and seek to break it later.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, the Boston Red Sox win the World Series at home in historic Fenway Park for the first time since 1918.
Bedlam at Fenway Park as the Red Sox clinch the World Series at Fenway for the first time in 95 years.
Boy, was that fun. Love you, St. Louis, but that was fun here. Tens of thousands marched in the Greenwich Village Halloween Parade in New York City. It was all canceled last year. In the chaos of Superstorm Sandy, this year it was back.
Ghosts, zombies, they look real to me. I said, whoa, look, nice costume.
But still plenty of Sandy damage out there. And alt-rock pioneer Lou Reed died at 71. He broke musical boundaries here in 1972 with Walk on the Wild Side.
She says, hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side. And the colored girls go doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo.
We're looking at a week in the news with Siobhan Gorman from the Wall Street Journal, intelligence correspondent there, and Julie Rovner, health policy correspondent for NPR. Jack Beatty's here. Just a little bit more on NSA here. One of our listeners, Government Banking Surf, writes, privacy, ha, that's so 1700s. Who needs it? A little sarcasm in defense of the Constitution there. Lots of callers on health care. Let's go to Nashville, Tennessee, and Bill. Bill, you're on the air. Thank you very much for calling.
Hi. As I said, my name's Bill. I'm 64 and a half. I got injured a year ago last May in 2012 and went on COBRA. The COBRA was almost $1,000 a month, and it was for everything, dental, psych, whatever. I tried signing up for Obamacare, and what I found out is for me to get Obamacare with similar coverage just for medical alone is over $900 a month. I haven't had any income in this year and a half. I don't collect any money from the government. Haven't been on welfare. I just don't understand it.
Bill, what's your state? Are you a Tennessean or where are you looking?
I'm from Alaska. I'm going through Tennessee right now, and I heard your program.
Yeah.
The other thing that I just want to mention is I'm adult-onset diabetic, and I take oral medication. It's like about $20
yep.
a month.
Yep.
And there is a big difference in price between whether you're taking a prescription and not having a prescription. I thought this was all supposed to be no pre-existing
You're beyond my pay grade, but Julie Rovner knows a lot. Let's go to the big picture first, if we can. Stand by, Bill. Julie, what do you think of this picture? 64
yeah.
years old.
No,
you got the story. What are you hearing?
Right. This all doesn't sound right. First of all, if you have no income, you're eligible. Well, if you have no income, you should be eligible for Medicaid. Although I think Alaska is not one of the states that's expanding Medicaid. And then there can be a problem if you're in a state that's not expanding Medicaid. And you really have no income, then you can fall into a gap where you're not eligible for anything. If you have income above poverty and you go on to the exchange, then you're eligible for really big subsidies. So I'm not sure that this gentleman has actually gone through the entire process, because once you go through the process, they'll tell you what you're eligible for in terms of subsidies. Yes, if you are older, you do pay higher premiums, but no. In fact, the caller was correct in his interpretation. It doesn't matter if you what kind of pre-existing conditions you have, what kind of prescription drugs you take, you don't pay more for that. Now, there are some plans that provide more or less in terms of prescription drug coverage, that there are plans that are more and less generous. You can buy a bronze plan that has a lower premium but higher out-of-pocket costs. You can buy, a gold plan a little bit higher that has a higher premium but covers more of your out-of-pocket costs. So that's your choice. But when you get those subsidies, depending on your income, and if indeed this gentleman's income is as low as he says, he may be eligible for a silver plan that gives you not only subsidies for your premium but subsidies for your out-of-pocket spending. The other thing is, if he's 64 and a half, when he turns 65, he'll be eligible for Medicare. So that's another sort of complication. When he becomes eligible for Medicare, he'll no longer be eligible for a plan on the exchange. And I'm not sure how that works if it's the year that you become eligible for Medicare. He might actually want to go, actually call the 877 number and get in touch with one of these navigators, one of the people that can actually help walk through this, because that's a complication. complication that's even above my pay grade.
I mean, healthcare,
I know a fair bit about this.
Yes, you do. Healthcare is just complicated. But I mean, just, you know, you say go through the process and find out what you're eligible for. And that's been part of the problem here. I mean, when it comes to enrollments, we had the news this week that in the first day, it was something like six people signed up. The first 2 days, it was only 200 plus enrollments nationwide. It's pretty tough to get all the way through this and understand.
It is pretty tough. It's getting better. I mean, I think, you know.
Is it really? We hear that. But do you really know that? It's hard for me to judge.
It is. And, you know, and I've been on the website on and off. And, you know, and that's, I mean, I'm making that judgment based on my visits to the website and also talking to people. I know that there are people, particularly in states where the federal government is running the website, and that is most of the states. But yes, I'm not saying it's good yet. It's definitely not good yet. And as I mentioned at the top, the website was down for, you know, a day and a half this week. It's not great. They say it's not great. They say it's not going to be good until the end of November. But there is still a lot of time to sign up. I mean, nobody says that this was not a really flawed rollout. People are really frustrated. People who tried to get on early created these accounts. You know, it takes a long time to get back the confirmation of what you're eligible for. Some of that information was flawed. Apparently, the information of the people who did get through and got to the insurers, that information was flawed. So that's a problem. I mean, nothing about this was good. But that's not to say that it can't or won't be fixed. I'm not a tech person. I don't know how hard it's going to be to fix. All I know is that what the administration is telling us is that it's fixable and it will be fixed. But obviously, there's a lot of interest and a lot of people that, you know, that want to get health insurance. There are plans out there. We know that. We can see them on the website for sale. So presumably at some point we're going to be able to connect the people who want insurance with the people who are selling it, or at least that's the goal here.
Lissa in Cheshire, Connecticut. Lissa, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I have so many comments, I don't even know where to begin about health care. I, too, received a letter from Blue Cross dropping my coverage. And I received at the end of September saying shortly a new plan will be offered to me. I haven't heard anything yet. Here it is, November.
Yeah.
So it means I will have to go on the Connecticut Health Exchange, which our state offers.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have a computer, so I discovered you can call them on the telephone. Well, you can call them on the telephone, but they don't know anything. And I wish I could record. I wish the NSA were recording their conversations.
So that we could hear them? Oh, boy.
They start out the sentence saying one thing, and by the end of the sentence, they've contradicted it.
I mean, there's the intersection of NSA and healthcare. Lissa, I can hear that you've got a lot of other thoughts. Our time is short. But, Jack, I mean, this is a complicated, complicated realm. On the other hand, the government has deliberately come in here because there were problems. So now we have these large charges of, you know, screw up, failure, people getting kicked out of their insurance. On the other hand, the president coming back and saying, yes, but it was lousy before. What do you want to do? Nothing. Work with me here. Is that defense working, Jack? Do you see some kind of glide path toward resolution here? Or are we in for, you know, I don't know what, years of wrangling over this and then the whole thing falls down and something else? I mean, can we handle a mess like that?
Well, we may be. I just saw this morning that Julie will know about this, but next October that something's going to happen in the private insurance market just before the election that may well result in even higher premiums for people in that market. I don't know the technicalities of it, but that's the example of, you know, sort of bombs planted in the road of this as we go on. But, you know, when you contrast this website and the marketplace and so on, which is a private deal, right? It's all about private insurance companies with the public program. What does it look like? Well, 9 out of 10, what I'm reading this morning, people applying in the states are applying for the public program, Medicaid, and that's going well. So one doesn't want to say, well, would Medicare for all go well too? We don't know. But the point is, this complicated system is an effort to create, you know, government regulation with private profit, and the two systems just working together, you're inevitably going to have all kinds of trouble.
Of course, the president came to Massachusetts, where Republican Mitt Romney was governor, came to the very hall, Faneuil Hall, where Mitt Romney announced the plan upon which President Obama's plan is now modeled, trying to say there, look, you know where this came from. Let's do it together. But I don't see any unity forming quick here. Mary in Oklahoma City. Mary, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I buy private insurance, and I have for the past year. I just got a letter from my insurance company telling me that my rates are going to go up over $100 because of taxes imposed by Obamacare. I thought the whole point was that this was supposed to bring our premiums down, not go up.
Julie?
Well, yeah, that was one of the unfortunate things that the president said. I remember flinching when he first said this. I think when he was a candidate that premiums, that he was going to bring down premiums, by $2,500. There is, in fact, everybody pays this. It's a per head fee. It goes into effect on January 1st, 2014 of $63 a year. And this is for everybody. A lot of people are complaining about this. $63 a person for the next, I can't remember whether it's 2 or 3 years, and it's to create this reinsurance pool so that very expensive people with a lot of very expensive claims will be that money can be and the insurers can tap that pool to help offset the cost of very expensive claims. And basically that's going to be put on, everybody who has insurance, for whether you're in the individual market or the group market or even the self-insured market, people who, these are large companies who don't even use insurance companies. So everybody's going to pay that for the next couple of years. And basically everybody is just passing that through. So everybody's insurance is going to go up. It's basically $5 a month. So a lot of people are getting that. There is also a health insurance tax. There were a lot of taxes imposed to basically pay for the cost of putting these people, of paying for the subsidies and paying for the expansion of Medicaid. If you remember that this was going to be revenue neutral law, it was not going to add to the deficit. So yes, everybody's paying a little more for a lot of things. And again, these things are being passed through. So insurers are saying, we're increasing your premiums because, and mostly it's, not a whole lot, but healthcare costs keep going up. So a lot of people are getting not huge, but feelable premium increases, and they are, in fact, due to the law. In some cases, people will pay less, and we're not hearing a lot from the people who are going to pay less. They don't complain. That's the nature of things. So,
well, they may not even know if they can't sign up. They don't know, and so off you go. I mean, 300 million stories plus on this, as many as there are Americans. We're going to hear a lot more of them over time. We will come back, no doubt, again and again to the health care issue. I want to look abroad just a little bit, if we may, before our hour is out here. Siobhan Gorman, Nouri al-Maliki, the head of Iraq, president of Iraq in Washington this week. This is sort of in our peripheral vision, but it's disturbing. He's coming saying, look, we need help to keep control of our country. We need your helicopters and more. What's going on in Iraq that's got him here with his hat in hand? And what kind of reaction do you see him getting, Siobhan?
Well, violence has really surged in Iraq this year, and some of it is really a lot of it's related to al-Qaeda, and some of it is related to this kind of cross-border reinforcement we're seeing between Iraq and Syria. It used to be that there were foreign fighters going from Syria into Iraq to join al-Qaeda there. Mm-hmm. Now it's foreign fighters going from Iraq into Syria to join the foreign fighters there. And now they're kind of flowing back and forth, kind of raising havoc on both sides. And so this is obviously caused real problems for Maliki. The reception he's getting here is kind of lukewarm. I mean, the Obama administration has been ambivalent on many fronts about greater involvement in conflicts in the Middle East. You've seen that with the Syria policy. And the Obama administration had vowed to get out of Iraq. And there's also some tension between at least some on Capitol Hill and the Iraqi government, feeling that Maliki himself is responsible for some of the difficulties he's running into there because he's had a very autocratic rule, and that kind of thing does tend to spur more Sunni-Shia tensions.
Could we see a merger of the Syria chaos and what's going on in Iraq, or are these distinct conflicts at this point, Siobhan?
Well, there are certainly elements of spillover that we're starting to see now, because you're seeing the fighters in Iraq starting, continuing to contribute to the violence in Syria, and there's kind of flow of fighters back and forth across the border. So this is, when I speak with counterterrorism and intelligence officials, they do talk about concerns about spillover back into Iraq from Syria.
Julie, Texas and abortion. They've been looking to effectively shut down a lot of clinics there. Then a judge said no. Then a judge has just said yes, and it looks as though a bunch of them are coming down. What's the signal out of Texas on this front, Julie?
That's right. You know, this, of course, was the law that basically shut down the Texas legislature for a while, and then the Texas legislature was called back into session by Governor Perry, passed this law earlier in the week. A federal district court judge said that it was unconstitutional. It was an undue burden on women's ability to get abortions. And then last night, appeals court said, no, the law could go into effect immediately. This is mostly over whether or not doctors need to have admitting privileges at hospitals. Well, many hospitals will not give doctors who perform abortions admitting privileges because mostly they don't practice at those hospitals. The judge said that didn't matter. The state still had a right to do this. It's not clear what the next step will be. It's possible that some of these abortion rights organizations could appeal to overturn this state directly to the Supreme Court. We'll have to wait and see, but it looks like this law is about to go into effect.
And, of course, food stamp cuts coming, as I guess, starting today. We will talk more about that on Monday, about the kind of big wrestling match over priorities here. Wow, so many big stories going on here, unresolved at this point, and we will stay abreast of it all. Hey, Jack, a Red Sox win in your backyard, Old Fenway. It's been 1918 since they heard that kind of joy music. Too bad for St. Louis Cardinals. Great team, my childhood team. They're the Sox. Were you hooting and hollering, Jack?
I sure was. And, you know, it was World Championship. And sure enough, there was a Japanese pitcher on the mound. There was a world element right there. How about that?
Globalization right on the mound. He looked happy right along with the rest of them. It was a great night. Say, somebody wins, somebody loses, but it was a great night in Fenway Park. Julie Rovner with NPR covering healthcare so well. Julie, it's great to have you with us this week. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
And Siobhan Gorman, intelligence correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. You're terrific, Siobhan. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, follow us all over the place online at onpointradio.org, On Point Radio on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at Tom Ashbrook, NPR. Thanks for joining us today. This is On Point.